Hello and welcome to Jaw Law. I'm your host, Joe McGregor from Dallas, Texas, and today we're going to talk about restraining orders. Now, to be honest, this title is a little clickbaity because restraining orders probably mean something different to you than they do to what we're going to talk about today. We're definitely going to talk about restraining orders or a type of restraining orders, but we're going to talk about them as they appear in dental employment agreements. What inevitably happens is someone's looking through their dental employment agreement and they see a paragraph probably towards the end, and it's this really thick block of legalese that says something about injunctive relief, and they can sue you for a bunch of money, they don't have to post bond, that the remedies of law are insufficient, and that you acknowledge all of this stuff, and you don't even know what you're acknowledging. Well, that's what we're talking about. All right, the first place we have to start when we're talking about this, again, we're talking about some type of employment agreement. This concept appears elsewhere, but today, just to make it easy, I'm going to talk about it in the context of a dental employment contract. And most of those agreements have some kind of restrictive covenant. Again, that's the non-compete, the place where you can't work in the proximate 5 miles or 10 miles. And most of those are going to follow a pattern. What they're going to do is they're going to first state why they are needed. This is very common. They'll say, in exchange or in consideration for all the awesome things we're going to teach you, amazing experience you're going to have, the amazing training, whatever, we have a need to tie you down so that when you leave, you're not going to take all our patients and compete against us. Then they're going to list out the actual restrictions. They're going to say what you cannot do. You can't work in the next 5 miles, the next 10 miles. You can't steal our patients. You can't take our referral sources. You can't disclose confidential information. Whatever. They're going to list out the things that you cannot do. Then, often, they're going to list out a penalty. These are sometimes called liquidated damages, and we talked about that in a recent episode. Then, sometimes, they are going to talk about injunctive relief. Now, some contracts are going to call this something different, and a lot of jurisdictions talk about these things differently. They give them different names. But generally speaking, it's called injunctive relief. And what you need to know now is that it's this alternative relief for when you violate the contract. In the olden days of law, there were two types of law. Now, really, there were a lot of types of law, but generally speaking, there were two types of law. There were courts of law, and there were courts of equity. And I'm definitely oversimplifying this. I know some lawyers are going to listen to this, and they're going to roll their eyes. I get it. But for our purposes here, generally, very generally speaking, a court of law is a court where the judge is being asked to interpret the law that's already on the books. If you and I have a dispute, the judge is going to look at the law and say, what does the law tell me to do in this situation? And of course, each lawyer is going to argue what the law is actually saying, which interpretation is correct. A court of equity is a little bit different. It's asking the judge to kind of use your noggin a little bit, use your sense of justice, your moral compass to say, what is fair? Modernly, most of the times in most jurisdictions, there is not two courts. They are one and the same. So someone can argue for something in law and in equity. And sometimes you're going to see that in your contracts. Somebody will say, we will pursue any remedies that are available to us in law or in equity. Well, that's what that means. We can go to a court that administers the law or a court that administers equity or go to a court that administers both. Now, when you violate a contract, what's going to happen? Let's use an example. You violate your restrictive covenant. What's going to happen is your employer is going to go to the court and say, Joe McGregor had a 5-mile restrictive covenant, But there he is. Joe McGregor's working 4 miles away. He agreed not to do that. And there he is. So they're going to file this lawsuit, and it's going to take who knows how long, probably a good bit of time. They're going to spend a good amount of money. And by the time it's over, I'm probably going to lose if I'm in fact practicing 4 miles away and I don't otherwise have a good defense. And this episode isn't really talking about defenses. But if I violated, I'm going to lose. But here's the point. If this court case took a year and a year later, I lose, what's the point? I've been practicing for a year. I took all my patients. Yes, I may have to pay some money back to the practice, but they've just been devastated. That's not very fair, is it? Coming to the rescue of that injured practice is something called equity, injunctive relief, a restraining order. Courts basically allow a practice like that in that situation to go to the court and say, listen, if we have to do this lawsuit thing, it's going to take way too long. And by the time it's done, the damage will have been done. Can you do something before that? Can you stop the bleeding? And then we can figure it out. And that is what a restraining order is. So we think of restraining orders, you know, because we're watching TV or the news and we hear about somebody who has like some violent person who has a restraining order. It's the same concept of law. The court has the ability in certain circumstances to tell someone to stop doing something. And in your employment contracts, what's being done is you are agreeing that the practice can take that contract to court and tell the courts to have you stop violating that contract. Now, you might think, hey, why don't we always do this? That's not how this works. The law really does want us to figure out things in court. This remedy is reserved for very rare circumstances where that wouldn't be sufficient. And in fact, basically, what you have to prove is that, number one, they did violate it, that you would likely be victorious at court. So you can't just say, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to win. You actually have to show that there's a good chance that you would win. And you have to show that if the court were to not do anything, that you would suffer irreparable harm. So like in the case of a non-solicitation, if they allow me to solicit everyone and that's what I'm violating, then that is too late, right? I am going to get all these patients by the time the court figures this all out. So in a restraining order context, they have the ability to say, Joe, stop talking to these patients. And that's what that big block of text is saying. They're saying, hey, listen, you can't do these things. And if you do those things, we're going to sue you. But we also have the option to, in between here and there, to go to the court and ask you to stop doing that. Stop working there. Stop calling our patients. Stop soliciting our referral sources. And you're acknowledging this. You're saying, yeah, I know that this is a thing, that you may have to do this. And that's what all that language is saying. It's explaining this concept, explaining that you knew this was a possibility, and probably explaining that if they have to do this, you're going to pay for their lawyers. And that's it. I hope this helped you because I get this question enough. I know a lot of people have this question. It's just sometimes not worth asking people. Well, here it is. I hope this is helpful. Hope it's not too confusing. And if you have questions, always feel free to reach out. jmcgregor@mcgregorfirm.com. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.